Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, March 26, 2018. South Sudan embassy workers in Washington are on no show at work.
So there is no strike because there is no union here. When they signed, they signed as individuals. There was only one person last time who went to you, the Voice of America, Manyogluan. If he's the one on a strike, then it is only Manyog alone.
And IGAD's Council of Ministers says Riek Machar's house arrest should be lifted immediately.
For IGAD's Council of Ministers to decide, okay, we are moving him from South Africa and taking him elsewhere where he's still in confinement, and you can see the restrictions that they've put around it, and especially when they actually don't see the signing of the cessation of hostilities as IO now committing itself to peace.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Local staff at the South Sudan Embassy in Washington downed their tools today protesting salary delays. My colleague Ayen Bior went to the embassy this morning to check on the status of business. Ayen, can you tell us what you saw at the South Sudan embassy this morning?
Yes, thank you, Tanza. Well, as you just said, as I understand, some staff members are on strike. There are 12 local staff members in South Sudan's embassy here in Washington, and they have not gotten paid for 9 months. And because of that, some have told us that they will not show up to the office. I got to the office around 10:30 a.m. Washington time today, and from past experience, there are normally people around there at this time. In the past, when I've gone there in the late morning, staff members are in the kitchen enjoying tea or coffee and speaking with each other. Today felt different. It was noticeably empty, but I should say it was not completely empty. The staff operating the visa office were present. They were there. I ran into two other staff members while I was there, but the office was not bustling. I did get a chance to speak with Ambassador Gordon Bwai about the concerns that embassy staff have shared with this program. And he tells me the staff should not be surprised that their paychecks are late because of a clause in their contracts that stipulates that there could be a lateness in payment due to the economic situation in the country.
Yeah, thank you, Ayen. South Sudan's deputy head of mission at the embassy here, Gordon Bwai, says the local staff are not on strike. Bwai claims most of the embassy staff are sometimes late for work.
And when they sign the contract, there is a clause in the contract saying that the money would be late, the salaries would be late, and they are aware of it, and they accept it to work. And last year I came with a new policy giving them the right to have a part-time job. That's why they're driving Uber, because I told them since the money would be late, so I allow you to work part-time job, drive Uber, and then I will not deduct that from your salary because I understand the situation. So we also have revenue. Whenever we have money from revenue and then they need loan, we give them loan. And then once we give them loan, we deduct that loan from the salaries when the salary comes. So that is the situation. The situation is manageable. We are managing it based on our situation. Until by June, then things will be different. Because the last payment that we are paying the Sudanese government, according to 2012 agreement, the last payment is May. All the 3 billion will be paid by May. Then by June, then South Sudan will be getting $70 million to the South Sudan account a month. So everything will change once we get that money.
In June?
In June, yes. The last payment to Sudanese government is May for us to clear $3 billion of the 2012 agreement. So if starting from June, things will be different. Yeah.
How many months are owed by the embassy to the local staff? How many months have they gone without pay?
9 months. It's 9 months. So those 9 months arrears will be paid. Even now, the Minister of Finance is working to pay another 3 more months.
We're told that a payment of at least 1 month was expected today on Monday. And I am told by you that that has not been received yet. Can you explain that?
The money was wired by our bank last Friday. So once the money is wired, it takes 3 to 4 business days to appear in our account, because it has to go to the bank in Uganda, bank in Uganda, New York, and then our bank account in Washington. So I'm expecting by Wednesday, then the money will be cleared, because it has to be cleared by the system, by the American government.
some of the workers told us that they will go on strike today and they will not show up to the office if they did not receive the money. So from their perspective, they were expecting the money today. So can you explain to them why the money has not come?
No, I already explained to them last week that the money would be sent. I already told them that the money was wired on Friday. And they already know that once it is wired, it takes time for the money to arrive. So there is no strike because there is no union here. When they sign as individuals. There was only one person last time who went to you, the Voice of America, Manyok Lual. If he's the one on a strike, then it is only Manyok alone. But the rest of the local staff, they are coming. You did not see them because I gave them the opportunity to go and drive Uber in the morning. I have only one meeting, but the diplomat will drop me because it's not just a reception at the Canadian Embassy. But I allowed them to go for a part-time job, at least for this survival.
And to your knowledge, has anyone come to you and said, I will not show up for work until we get that payment?
No, they didn't show it. They before I arrived, because I came last week on Tuesday, when the money did not arrive with the money of diplomats, some of them made those languages to my colleague who was a counselor, who was in charge. But when I came, I explained to them, and then they said, okay, we will wait.
To your knowledge, no one has come to you and said, I'm not showing up for work, so you are expecting your staff to show up to work today.
Yeah, they are coming today, but it's because I told them you can go for Uber, but the executive secretaries would be coming. Like the one running our finance is a local staff, and she will be coming.
What about the rent for the offices here in Washington? Are those being paid?
Yes, the rent is paid because we have a revenue. We get visa money. Sometimes a month could be 30,000. Sometimes it can go down to 10 to 15,000, depending on the volume of people from Canada and U.S. traveling to South Sudan. So the operational cost is being taken care of.
What is the operational cost from month to month? How much is rent for the embassy in Washington?
And the embassy in Washington is $18,000 a month.
That's Ambassador Gordon Boy, the deputy head of mission at the South Sudan Embassy here in Washington. Last week, a driver at the South Sudan Embassy, Manyok Lual, told this program that he has not been paid for 11 months. Manyok told us that some of his colleagues at the embassy downed their tools because they did not receive their salaries. We now go live to Manyok in the city of Baltimore. Manyok, are you there?
Yes, Jan.
Why are you not at work today? You're supposed to be at the embassy. What are you doing in Baltimore?
I came to pick up my car and to go back on the statement that you asked me for. I need to go back a little bit. When Ambassador was in South Sudan, we had a meeting with Dombe, who was in charge. According to the letter that sent from Juba, it stated that the money will be wired. So we give the benefit of doubt to Dombek, and we say we will wait until the 20th. And on the 20th, the result became negative. And then Ambassador came to the state, and then he chaired the meeting when he took over. And Ambassador told her that the money has been wired, so tonight I'm going to receive the swap code. And we say, okay, let us give Ambassador the chance so that we will see on Friday, as he said. And then on Friday, nothing happened. So we went to Ambassador and told him that, Ambassador, we are going to implement what we decided last 2 weeks ago on the 13th.
What did you decide? What did you decide?
On Monday.
Let's make the story short. What did you decide on the 13th?
We decide all of the local employees not to come to work. We are on the strike.
How many of you are on strike?
11 of us, and one has given birth shortly, so she did not come to work. And then the other one is on her vacation. So the active employees were 11. So all of us did not show up today.
You listened to the interview Ayen did with Ambassador Gordon Boy this morning at the embassy. He said there is no union in the embassy, so you cannot be on strike. Did you hear that?
Yes, I hear that, but I will say that is a lie, because if the employee did not get paid by the employer, how they will come to work and they don't get this right?
And he also said that in your contract, it's written that you will expect salary delays because of the situation in South Sudan. Is that correct?
No, Jan, we have the contract. Each of us having the contract. If ambassador tries to do propaganda on the employee's salary, that is not true. And I have my contract physically, and somebody can look into that contract.
And what,
if there is any,
what does your contract say?
I'm not agree with that.
What does your contract say? Does it say you will be paid after 3-4 months, or what does it say? Could you tell us just about the section which talks about payment?
My contract tells me that I do the job end of the month. After 30 days, I will get paid. That's how my contract pays.
All right, Manioc Lual, thank you very much for speaking to us here at the Voice of America. That was Manioc Lual, a driver at the South Sudan Embassy, who is one of the staff members who downed their tools today.
And to make it clear, Jan, for example, the one who gave the message, our final message, last Friday was Susie Agamlung and Nyakan Jan Gill.
Thank you.
And
thank you very much.
Who give the message to ambassador that we are not coming to work on Monday.
Thank you very much, Manioc. Now we move to Addis Ababa. The IGAD Council of Ministers says the house arrest of opposition leader Riek Machar should be lifted immediately. In its communique of the 61st extraordinary sessions in Addis Ababa, the Council of Ministers also reiterated its commitment for a durable solution in the conflict in South Sudan. The family of Dr. Riek Machar have expressed disappointment with the IGAD Council of Ministers' decision to move Riek Machar to another location. Angelina Teny Machar says the decision will impact negatively on the peace process.
If you read it carefully, actually there is no lifting of any house arrest, because what they've said is very clearly that they will transfer him from where he is now, which is South Africa, to another location that is not in the region. And that would not be in any proximity with South Sudan. That rules out anything called lifting, because that's not lifting. That's like when you transfer somebody from one prison to another, and it happened. So in that sense, it is extremely disappointing. I believe it is a serious setback. The other thing is they also put conditions. In our view, as IO, we feel have already been met. For example, they say that he must first denounce violence. If you recall, we signed the agreement on the cessation of hostilities in December 2017. That agreement on cessation of hostility is basically agreeing that we are going to cease fire. We are implementing the agreement of the cessation of hostilities.
They're talking about,
however,
the
government has not been implementing the agreement on the cessation of hostilities.
Madam, talking about the implementing the agreement, I was just talking to a priest in Arua who escaped from Kajukeji, that there's heavy fighting going on in Kajukeji right now between your forces and the government of South Sudan. So which agreement are you talking about being implemented?
From our side, I said. Because even the fighting in Kajukeji did not even start today. It has, in fact, started yesterday morning. And it was the government forces that actually attacked. And we have already raised this with CITISAM. And you know also our military deputy spokesperson made a statement regarding what's happening in Kajukeji. So it is the government's attempt and plan to actually close up the border and push all our forces along the border out of the position. So this is the case of self-defense I was talking about.
Yes. Talking about the situation of Dr. Riek Machar, you're saying that you are not happy with the decision of the Council of Ministers. And you're saying, according to you, it is transferring him from one confinement to another. Isn't that what IO has been calling for Machar to be released from South Africa? That's my understanding when I've been speaking to your leaders. All you've been saying that is that Machar should be released from South Africa.
What we've been talking about, that he be released from South Africa, he'll be released and he's given his freedom. And for IGAD Council of Ministers to decide, okay, we are moving him from South Africa and taking him elsewhere where he's still in confinement, and you can see the restrictions that they've put around it, and especially when they actually don't see the signing of the cessation of hostilities as IO now committing itself to peace. They made another condition to say that he must not obstruct the peace process. How can he be obstructing the peace process or the revitalization process when he had already appointed a delegation that has been actually engaging very constructively in the last two rounds of sessions of talks? That condition doesn't even come into consideration because as far as we are concerned as IO, he has actually pushed IO to go and be part of the next round of talks. So that is why we see it as a very disappointing, I don't want to say progress, but a disappointing situation that the Council of Ministers have just created. And to me, and IO, we see this as actually, it's going to implicate the process. It's going to implicate the process because IO is being pushed to negotiate from a position where his leader is in captivity.
Were there any discussion with family members before this decision was reached? Were you consulted?
No. We have never been consulted. Not now, not ever. Even the consultation I've been having, maybe this is the first time ever when in during the last 1 year and a half or almost 2 years when I met with the Prime Minister in Ethiopia. And so on, but also I went in my capacity as a member of the delegation of the peace process. So personally, I had a meeting with the Prime Minister of Ethiopia.
The former Prime Minister.
The Prime Minister of Ethiopia made it very clear that he was going to invite the chairman of IO to come and be part of the revitalization process. Now, you know that revitalization process is taking place in Addis. That's one. He also said that he was going to talk to his colleagues in the region with that regard. He was also going to address the president of South Africa in that regard. And as far as I'm aware, he actually did exactly that. He spoke to the South African president with regards to allowing our chairman to come and be part of the process. The way our chairman is being treated, it is absolutely uncalled for.
From the last time I was in Addis Ababa, before every sitting is arranged, IGAD normally writes a letter to Dr. Riek Machar to appoint people who will speak on his behalf. So in one way, IGAD still recognizes him as the leader of SPLM-IO.
Yes, IGAD recognizes him as the leader of SPLM-IO. There's no doubt about it. However, IGAD has also just decided today in their meeting of the Council of Ministers that, you know, his movements are restricted. He will be under confinement. They are moving him from one confinement to another. So basically, IGAD is also giving IO pressure.
That's Angelina Teng, the wife of SPLM-IO leader Dr. Riek Machar. Angelina is also a senior member of the SPLM-IO. She was speaking to me this past hour from London. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a 19-year-old man is convicted of rape in Juba. Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you are leaving your country, what is the most important thing you would pack to take with you?
I have a bangle that was given to me by my dad. I wouldn't leave that because I treasure it a lot. I love it because it was given to me because of the love.
My phone, of course. That one I can't leave it behind because anything can happen. And my phone, I have to communicate in case anything happens. I have to go with my phone if I'm leaving my country.
My sewing machine, because I would want to go out there and still be doing that work so that I can still sew for people.
My diary, because I have jotted a lot of things there that I will not want to forget.
I always take my sponge, my soap, and even the container. My children used to say, "You are so funny, Mommy."
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A high court judge in Juba today sentenced a 19-year-old man to 7 years in prison after finding him guilty of rape. While relatives of the 18-year-old victim and prosecutors say they welcome the sentence, family members of the accused say they will appeal. Waki Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
Justice Angole Court sentenced the 19-year-old John Kizito to 7 years in prison for rape and 20-year-old James Wani to 6 months in jail for stealing the phone of the victim. The Screen of Rights, a local human rights organization that works to end gender-based violence in South Sudan, provided free legal aid to the rape victim, who we shall call Winnie, to protect her identity. Rich Malwal, director of the Screen of Rights, sees the sentencing as a positive move, but notes that it is customary for the victim's family and a perpetrator to reach their own kind of agreement outside of court,
where even the victim can get married to the rapist. And in this case, we have seen justice, we have seen the end of justice, and we encourage all the families across South Sudan, in case something like that happened to your daughter or any other person, you don't have to encourage any other, you know, solution outside the court. Let the justice be safe, and this is how we can deter crime in our community.
Prosecutors told the court that 4 suspects were involved in the case, but 3 are still at large. The prosecution also indicated that the attack took place last November when students from area schools gathered to mark Supiri Secondary School Day. While students were taking part in the festivities outside the classroom, the victim's father testified that his daughter was feeling unwell and entered one of the classrooms where she sat on one of the desks with her head down. The same witness testified that a male student entered the classroom and took Winnie's phone from her bag. He said shortly afterwards, 3 other young men entered the classroom, dragged her outside and physically assaulted her before raping her. Speaking in Arabic, the victim's father welcomed the judge's verdict.
I'm really feeling relieved, and I cannot say something because law is law. It is the law that has made this judgment. I cannot say this judgment is small or big.
Speaking in Arabic, William Makweng, a relative of the defendant found guilty of rape, says he welcomes the verdict but encouraged authorities to track down and arrest the other 3 suspects.
Well, I can say this is a crime that is being made. I don't have problem with the ruling because this is the law of South Sudan. Under the law, it is a crime. And under the same law, you cannot forcefully sleep with a woman reaching up to 5 people. This behavior is wrong.
Kizito and James have 2 weeks to appeal the ruling. It's not clear how many convicted rapists are sent to prison in South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
We now turn to Kenya, where a lawyer who was deported after swearing opposition leader Raila Odinga as people's president has returned to Kenya. In January, Miguna Miguna administered the oath of office to opposition leader Raila Odinga as the people's president. He was deported to Canada by the government. Miguna later had a fallout with Odinga, accusing the opposition leader of betraying his supporters by meeting with the Kenyan president Uhuru Kenyatta. Miguna tells VOA's James Batty, Kenya delayed implementing a court order allowing his safe return to Kenya.
I want to be accurate factually. I head the National Resistance Movement of Kenya, but I'm also an advocate of the High Court of Kenya. I practice law. I also have family in Kenya. I will be doing all those that appertain to my responsibilities as a citizen. I will continue to lead the NRM Kenya. I will continue to fight for justice. I will continue to resist and fight the despots Uhuru Kenyatta and William Ruto. And I intend to lead a revolutionary movement that will replace them.
You want a security guarantee upon your arrival or return. If you are just a citizen, why do you need security?
Why wouldn't I need security? As a citizen of Kenya, I require security. It is a right. And as you realize, my personal security was jeopardized the last time before they forcefully removed me from Kenya. They abducted me, so I don't want them to abduct me anymore. They detained me incommunicado. I don't want them to detain me incommunicado anymore. They tortured me. I don't want to be tortured anymore. So I would like my right to be safeguarded and guaranteed by those intending to interfere with them.
Have you been guaranteed those security rights?
No, I've not. I've not been guaranteed. But the court has ordered that I be guaranteed. the first thing they must do is to obey court orders.
Why are you demanding or requesting access to the Kenyan Commission for Human Rights?
I'm not demanding. The court ordered that. You know, the problem with your questions, Mr. Bhatti, is that you're acting as if you are not aware of the court orders. Those are court orders. Why are you not recognizing court orders? Why are you talking as if the government is above the law? Governments are not above the law. We are not talking here of people who are monarchs. Kenya is not a monarch. You're a theocracy. Kenya is supposed to be a democracy. We have a constitution. We have laws. We have the judiciary. If somebody has a problem with Miguna, they should take Miguna to court, not arbitrarily withdraw his rights.
If the government has not met these court requirements or these court demands, don't you think your return is going to be a bit risky?
Well, the thing is, we are not going to surrender to a dictatorship because they don't respect the rule of law or because they disregard or disobey court orders. We are going to ensure that we force compliance with court orders through positive public action against the despotism. That is why I'm going back. I'm going back to make sure that that compliance happens, and it'll be up to them to pick and choose which laws they obey and which ones they disobey.
Once again, so you are arriving in Kenya on Monday?
On Monday the 26th at 2:15 p.m., Air Emirates.
Dr. Miguna, thank you very much for speaking with us.
I appreciate.
That's Miguna Miguna, former lawyer for Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga. He was speaking with VOA's James Bhatti from Toronto earlier yesterday. And that brings us to the end of our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Bra by Koffi Nti and Ofori Mposa. Mafia set up, baby, I'm a coy, a honyan, no, baby, I'm now.
Rubbish a menin,
baby, coffee, yes, I'm a good air for the army back. Mafia set up, baby, I'm a coy, a honyan, no, baby, I'm now.
Odo ma fi mi tofin, odo ma kai mi wapin, odo ma fili fili, ma cheki cheki, ma cheki cheki. Baby, I'm into me now. Although my feel me toughin', although my time me wapin', although my feely feely, my checky checky, my yada yada. Baby, I'm into me now.
Rubbish a minute, rubbish a minute, rubbish a man. Rubbish a man, rubbish a me mushi, rubbish a me mushi, rubbish to me mushi.
Listening to Koffi Nti and Ofori Mposa with the song Bra. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We want to know what you think about this show. You can find us at web. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also look us up on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Nimfalemu, mishawana, nimfabima, mefawana, nimfajagua, mishawana, nimfahima, mishawana, tie wacho.